chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, our neighbor Phil Manning, who is the editor of Science Book News, a weekly email report on new books dealing with scientific topics. Also a regular reviewer of science-related books, not only for the Raleigh News and Observer, but for newspapers across the country, has turned his attention to a new book called The Better Angels of Our Nature. It's a book by Harvard professor Steven Pinker. And Phil Manning, thanks for coming. You wrote a review, which was in the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
Cleveland Plain Dealer, yes.
And, I mean, we ought to celebrate the fact that we've got a guy in Chapel Hill who writes for newspapers across the country.
Well, thank
on
you. I don't
topics,
write all that much, but I do some.
But why? And we were talking outside the radio, outside the range of the radio microphone, and you told me that this book, which is called The Better Angels of Our Nature, got your attention, and it deals with the answering the question that we say, why? I think we ask ourselves in America, looks like crime's gone down. And this book, I guess, has a bigger picture than just local crime in terms of violence and cruelty and things like that.
That's right. Actually, it has two theses, although one is not explicitly stated. One is that people have become less cruel to one another. And the other one is that violence on the whole has declined. And the first thesis, by the way, that we are less cruel than we used to be, is just unassailable. I mean,
you can question anything. So how can you say that we are less cruel as a world group of people today than we were as a world 150 years ago or 200 years ago or longer than
300 years ago, 500 or 10,000, yeah.
And so we're less cruel, and you can prove that. Or he proved it satisfactorily to you.
Very, very much. And so. I don't think anybody would doubt.
Prove it to me then, if it's.
Well, I give you an example. This was in 1660, October 13, 1660. Samuel Pepys, the famed diarist, he wrote in his diary. He says, "Look, I'm going out today." He says,
"Right, this is in London in the 1600s."
1660s, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 16. This would be the time that of the James II was back on the throne in England. It was a time when there was a lot of ferment and revolution and strife in England.
Yeah, also it was the time of the Great Fire, too, so bad day in London. But what he said, this is very casual. So he wrote in his diary, he says, "Out to Charing Cross to see Major General Harrison hanged, drawn, and quartered." What that meant was that they hanged the general, but they didn't kill him. He just hanged him until he was almost dead, but not quite. Then he was disemboweled, he was castrated, and then his organs were burned in front of him while he was still alive. Now, that was 1660, and it was a public spectacle. The crowd was shouting and yelling. They were probably selling popcorn or something. It was just unbelievable. Even today, no matter where you go, you can't imagine such a spectacle. It's just impossible to imagine. And those things were not uncommon in those days and the days after that, for that matter. You might remember, even in this country, we had stocks and stuff. Things were really very cruel. People were literally boiled in oil, and all these cliched things were just so horrible. At one point, he describes a Roman crucifixion, what they did to people when they crucified them. It was just unbelievable. I mean, it was just horrible what they did. He said, Pinker, who described himself as a Jewish atheist, or atheist Jew, I guess, he said, "You know, if I had Hitler here, right here, and I could do whatever I want, I would never, ever consider doing anything like that to him, what they did routinely 2,000 years ago." So in my opinion, his argument that people have become less cruel is unassailable. I don't believe there's any.
Can I just argue with you a little bit about this?
Sure.
I mean, and I haven't read the book, so it's not fair, I guess. But you know, we see these just in our time. That is during our lifetime. I'm pretty old, but during our lifetime, there were still lynchings in my region of the country, and these were awful. On occasion, they were awful spectacles. Within 70, 80, 90, 100 years in the United States, people gathered to watch people get lynched, and there were, maybe they didn't disembowel, but there were castrations, and there were all kinds of things where people were cheering. And if you want to go back a little bit further, it wasn't, we're not that far away from the time where there were public hangings in the United States, and people gathered around and cheered and had a public spectacle about it. So let me finish. You would say, okay, but no more. You'd say we've wiped it out. But there would be, I would believe, that if you had the public hangings, you'd have a crowd even today of people who say, these guys deserved it. I want to watch them suffer. Now,
I wouldn't go.
You wouldn't go, Pinker wouldn't go. Pinker wouldn't even torture Hitler. But do you not believe that in the United States there are not people who are still angry enough and believe that it would not just be, it wouldn't just be a personal sin to make Hitler suffer, but it would be an obligation that would be placed on us and that we would celebrate that? Yeah. So, I mean, you said it was unassailable. I'm just trying to assail your...
Yeah. Right? Well, I'm not saying... I don't think Pinker would say either that there's never going to be any cruelty or anything. But as a routine event, it's gone. It's over. I mean, we don't do stuff like that anymore. We don't... some of the pictures that they have of back in those days of the things they did, break them on the wheel and all kinds of stuff, we don't do that anymore. We don't do it.
We, meaning the people world. Of the European, Europe and North America?
Anywhere. They don't do stuff like that anymore. They don't have it.
Children's Liberation Army in Africa or the tribal groups in Afghanistan punishing heretics or foreigners. We read about cruel things that happen.
I would say that cruel things don't happen. They do happen. They just much rarer if they happen at all. And never, ever is it that I know of, is it become part of the culture as it was ordinary. I mean, Samuel Pepys was this refined guy. Here he goes out to see something that we can't even imagine looking at. I mean, and he goes out and looks at it, and it reports it like sort of, well, hey, this is what happened, you know, no big deal. That's over. It's over. That's what Pinker says, and I believe him, that stuff is, we are less cruel. That doesn't mean that we aren't cruel, that cruelty doesn't exist, but nothing like it used to.
His thesis that the level of cruelty has diminished gradually over time, or that there have been ups and downs, or that it's been a very precipitous drop just in the last 100 or 200 years?
Well, he doesn't actually, he plots everything on graphs, but this he didn't get. But what I think he believes is that, of course, it's up and down, but the general trend has been down over thousands of years now, and to where anybody, I think, would admit that the world today is more civilized place than it was 400 years ago or 1,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago. It just is. I mean, and we don't treat each other as badly today as we did then. Mm.
Well, one of the things I thought that you'd say in response to my assailing the thesis, yours and Pinker's thesis, is that cruelty, that although you might have said, DG, you're right, there, cruelty does exist and it's a part of human nature, but it is no longer in the major countries of the world, it's no longer institutionalized. And that while Pepys' description was of an institutional punishment of a someone who'd been disloyal or traitor, said something bad about the king or done something like
maybe
that bad.
Said something about the queen. But,
king then. Or maybe queen. Yeah, I don't know. King then, King James II. Anyway, that doesn't matter. But he'd done something against the government. The government responded that disloyalty, treason is the worst form of sin, and it's got to be punished and demonstrated to people that you do not do this without severe consequences, that governments no longer operate that way.
Nor do churches, by the way. they don't. The churches no longer burn people at the stake if you say something wrong that doesn't correspond to their dogma. No church does that anymore. But they used to do it routinely, all the time. Say something wrong. Say like Giordano Bruno say, well, I think maybe planets revolve around the sun, and they burn you at the stake. That's not good. That happened in 1600. That's a true story, and we don't do that anymore. We might kick you out of the church, or we might say we don't like you or whatever, but we don't burn people at the stake in this anywhere in the world, as far as I know.
Let's take a break, and then I'll come back and assail you more. I'm just with my friend Phil Manning, who is telling me about a new book by Steven Pinker called The Better Angels of Our Nature, about the diminishment of cruelty across the world. Dr. Manning, I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Phil Manning's instructing me about the messages in a new book called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And I have to confess that he's got the advantage because he's read the book and he's teaching me about it. I'm raising all these kinds of questions
pages.
And it's just not working. And I've said, based on, I thought, stuff that you've written about this book, that it is the history of the diminishment of cruelty, which you've described and he's described. You say, no, it's a book really about the decline of violence. What's the difference?
That's right. Well, violence would be wars, for example. I mean, and here I think Pinker makes a good case. But it's not nearly as rock solid as the case against cruelty. I believe virtually everybody would agree that cruelty has declined in the world over time. But violence, you might say, well, look, we're just coming off of two of the most violent wars ever in the history of the world, World War II and World War I. And so how can you claim that violence has declined? And Pinker makes the case this way. Basically, he says, yeah, there's a lot more people were killed in World War II. 55 million people, by the way, died in that war than in any other war. But he said a lot more people are alive today, too. And so if you look at
the percentage,
of the population that died, the Mongol conquest, for example, killed a far higher percentage of people than World War II. And so that's his case that violence has declined. That's part of his case of why violence has declined. And he goes through a variety of reasons of why this happened. The number one reason being the beginning of a state government. Before that, I can't remember the statistics precisely, but like 5 out of every 10 people that were alive before there were governments or of any sort got killed in violence. One tribe raided another tribe.
Give us that statistic again.
I just made that statistic up. I'm not sure. But it's in that ballpark. A high, very, very high percentage of people before there were governments of any sort, there were tribes.
When there was no government, we're talking about ancient prehistory, really,
right,
is what we're talking
that's
about.
That's right.
Some
of those tribes still exist today. I mean, and they still are very violent in the sense that a very high percentage of them die in acts of violence, which is not true in more in
acts
societies.
As you understand it, it's acts of violence within the tribe or tribal conflicts with other tribes.
Between tribes.
So that within the tribe itself, there's a stable way to solve.
Yeah, but it's
disputes.
Very small, and it's no real government. It's just the people that live together. But within as I understand it, primarily it's between tribes. The one raids another for the women or the horses or whatever they go after, and a lot of people die that way. You might have a raid and only 8 people were killed, but if the total population of the village is 26, that's a very high percentage of people that are dying. And that's his point there. And you see that today. That has been borne out today by the few tribes that are left, these prehistoric tribes that have this prehistoric culture today. They still do the same thing. They still have a very high percentage of people
Sometimes we like to imagine that the ancient peoples lived in perfect harmony with nature and with themselves. And he's saying it wasn't that way. It was not that way.
Most likely was not. That's right.
But, I mean, still, we have larger tribes, but we still have conflicts with each other, with different countries, different groups of people, different larger groups of people, ethnic groups have conflicts.
And conflicts within the tribe or within the nation, as you put it, has also declined substantially. I've forgotten, again, the statistic, but in London about the 17th century, the crime was, London was just crime-ridden. I mean, it was just horrible. And Pinker, I think, made the case in another book called The Blank Slate, which said the installation of a police force is probably the best thing that ever happened in the decline of violence. And I think one of the very first ones was in London in that period of time.
So the police department, in the sense that you have the state, the collective state, has institutions that are designed specifically to reduce violence. They may not be perfectly efficient, but if they were not there, then our inclinations might lead us to have more conflict and more violence.
And even a poor or scary, like a monarchy of some sort, like Queen Elizabeth or whatever, is much better than no central authority. That's his point that he makes, and it goes back to Hobbes. You know, the quote, what is your nasty, brutish, and short, which Hobbes called the Leviathan. The Leviathan is the central state. Mm-hmm. And we've got bad central states, too. But even a bad central state, Pinker claims or hypothesizes, is better than no state at all.
Well, it's interesting because it touches me in terms of a problem that I'm wrestling with in my own mind that is not really directly related. But every now and then we look at like Afghanistan and we compare sort of today's Afghanistan, where there is no real effective central government and violence and tribal conflicts and it's gone. You know, it's not a very safe place to live. People are getting killed and assassinated. When the Taliban was in charge of Pakistan, it was horrible in many respects. And there was institutional violence, I would argue, like what you described that Pepys had in England. But there was relative stability and peace in terms of the ability of people to get along because there was a hard, heavy-handed penalty to pay. So I guess what I'm saying is that supports his theory, doesn't it? That a mean, terrible government is better than no government at all, with people and tribes split fighting each other.
That's what Pinker's point is. Of course, terrible government's not as good as a good government.
Right. Yeah. Well.
And somehow, you know, your ideas about Pakistan is a scary place because people get killed all the time. Sometimes that's the statistics don't really bear that out. I mean, one example I just heard recently was Israel. A guy wanted to go to Israel, and he was just scared because it's terrorist attacks and all kinds of people getting killed over there. Turns out, he would be about five times more likely of dying in a car accident in the United States over that same period of time as he would be killed by a terrorist if he went to Israel. He'd be safer in Israel than he was here. And so the statistics are not anecdotal. Anecdote is not data. And and that's what most of us go by is anecdotes. And that's one example of it, I think, where we don't really know. I don't know how many people die in Pakistan of terrorist attacks.
Well, I'm just carrying that. In Israel, there is theoretically a democracy, but it operates, at least with respect to its people, as authoritarian in terms of safety issues and patrols. And so if you cause a disturbance, you're likely to be tended to pretty quickly. But, let's take Egypt, though, which is nearby. And 2 years ago, I would have been very happy and felt very safe going to Egypt, where there was a heavy-handed authoritarian regime that kept people in its place. Now, thanks to the Arab Spring and the rushing of democratic spirits and the contention that goes on and the lack of order that is imposed, maybe it's just anecdotal, but I would be cautious about going to Egypt now. Now, how about you? I mean, doesn't that prove, you know, authoritarian government's better than no government at all?
I want to go to Paris anyway, instead of Egypt. So I feel perfectly safe. I don't really know about Egypt. I've never been there, and I'm really not in a position.
Well, the point, though, I mean, I'm trying, it's not really, but you see that, I mean, I'm just trying to say this awful thing that bad governments, mean-spirited governments, as far as day-to-day peace and nonviolence in the streets, that it might be good to have a violent government that represses dissent. If you just go along with them, you can be safe.
Yeah, and I'm sure, for example, in Iraq, that there are people who say, "Gosh, I wish Saddam Hussein was back because we had water ran and we had electricity and people didn't get blown up all the time." What you try for, at least I think, and I'm not really into social sciences very much, but it looks like what you shoot for is a good government that also accomplishes all those things, which hopefully we've got that in some countries, hopefully ours.
Yeah, hopefully. All right, let's take a quick break. We're visiting with Phil Manning. He's talking to me about some of the points raised in a new book by Steven Pinker called The Better Angels of Our Nature. Dr. Manning, and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Phil Manning. Phil Manning is a businessman, scientist, writer. What haven't you done? And athlete and tennis player.
One thing I haven't done well is almost all of those things, but I've done a little bit.
You've done all of them a little bit. Well, I think you've done all of them pretty well, including keeping those of us who are interested in science but have a hard time understanding what's going on. You help us regularly through your book reviews in the News and Observer and other newspapers, and through your weekly science book news. Link on our website to that in case anybody would like to request to get on that lineup. It's www.sciboks.org. Scibooks, SCIBOOKS.
Yes.
.org. Well, Phil, we're talking about something that's interesting, and the idea that we have so few things to be happy about, but we should maybe celebrate that we live in a world in which, notwithstanding all the reports of violence and surrounded by crime reports and reports of what's going on in the world in terms of military oppression, and that we really live in a world that's much less violent than our grandfathers lived in, and that their great-great-great grandfathers lived in, that we're blessed.
We absolutely have. We do. I believe it 100% on that. I would disagree. Unless you think I'm a Steven Pinker fan. He's a really smart man and a very good, clear writer. There's one part of the book where I think he misses the mark a little bit, and that is he talks about, we really haven't had a war between what he calls major powers. That would be us and Russia and Soviet, you know, whatever, Britain or something, since 1945. I mean, that's a pretty good little stretch. There's 65 years or so with zero big wars. We have small wars, but no big wars. And the question is why? And he just says it's because of the civilizing nature of what's going on, and doesn't admit to what I think is a real one source of it, and that is nuclear bombs. Those things scare even the worst dictator. And so as a consequence, they are any government has any sense at all would have some fear about attacking the United States or attacking the Soviet Union or attacking Britain or France, all of whom have nuclear weapons. And so I think, despite Linus Pauling, who was a two-time Nobel Prize winner and picketed violently, Haiti thought nuclear weapons were the worst thing in the world, and Linus Pauling was a very smart guy, but I think they were wrong. I think nuclear weapons actually do help preserve the peace, at least the kind of peace that could result in a worldwide conflagration like a World War II or World War I, something like that. I don't think we're going to have that. And Pinker doesn't think we're going to have it either, but he doesn't believe that nuclear power is playing a role with that, which I do, and some other people that have written about the book believe it has too.
So that your idea is you got to give credit to the deterrent that the nuclear weapons arsenals are to declaring war on a nuclear power.
Yeah, we've had I don't know what, but at least five, Pakistan and India, 7, 8, 10 I don't know nations that have nuclear bombs, nuclear weapons, and it's never been used ever in war anywhere except by the United States in 1945. That was it. They've not been used since then, and there've been some pretty desperate people with bombs, but they are so destructive that people don't want to use them, I think, and they haven't, it hasn't been used.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a long stretch of pretty good peace, although, you know, you could say Vietnam was horrible war, and it was, but compared to, I mean, the 50,000 people died, well, 55 million died in World War II. That's the kind of war you want to stay out of.
Well, just to take a different, who knows about that, but you're, to make a little side point to your point that nuclear weapons have prevented war in many respects. What nuclear weapons have not done? They haven't kept countries from confronting us, or haven't had kept groups of people from confronting us. The people in Iraq who have fought us, the people in Afghanistan who fought us, the people in Vietnam, people in Korea who fought us didn't. It was no big deal to attack or to confront a nuclear power. Now, it did probably restrain the Soviet Union, but we don't know for sure whether they would have attacked us had we not had nuclear weapons, and they had nuclear weapons. There were a lot of reasons not to do it. But, you know, I'm not sure where I hear your point, but I'm not sure where I go with it.
Well, actually, that discussion like this is one reason I'm a scientist and not a political scientist, because I don't know either. I mean, you know, we're speculating, and that's just my opinion. Pinker's opinion, who is probably much better thought out than mine in most ways, is not that. He believes that nuclear weapons did not play a role.
He just thinks humans are getting better and better as time goes on?
He doesn't not believe that human nature is changing. No, he believes that the forces that constrain us are changing.
Phil, one of the things that I think concerns many of us even more than these international issues is the question of the level of violence in our community. I'm more interested in violence in my house, and then in my block, and then my neighborhood, then in my town, and then in the surrounding area, maybe than I am about what's going on in some other part of the world. And does his theory say that violence is decreasing locally as well?
I don't know about your house. I don't know about that. But, he does imply that. You're right, you got a good point there in the sense that he doesn't ever really deal with that directly. He's mainly interested in big stuff and how that is declining. Although he does make the point that, for example, in the United States, we had a peak in crime, I think, back in the 60s, and we've been on a decline ever since. And he attributes, I guess this is part of this trend toward lower violence, but it doesn't, in my opinion, does not play a big role in his major thesis. But he does point it out.
One of his critics has said that the real one of the real explanations for the decline in violence is the national states. In other words, that you have brought together people, the nationalism has brought together people of like ethnic groups, and that it was very violent to sort all of that out in World War I, and then post World War I and World War II, and then post the collapse of the Soviet Union, as the different ethnic groups sort of segregate themselves, remove the different kinds of people, and that once you get a sort of consistent group of people together, it's easier to control them and control violence. Is that part of his theory?
Yeah, sort of tangentially. What he talks about, this actually originated with another man, that actually came out of the animal rights movement, which is what's called a circle of empathy. That is to say that the people who are part of our circle of empathy are people that we can understand. They're like us. We are not going to harm those people. I mean, they're part of us. And that circle, those circles of empathy around individuals, has been growing so that we now have empathy for people, not just within our tribal group or our families, but actually we can see people across the country and different races are part of that empathy. And if you feel empathy for people, you don't tend to kill them. This guy, by the way, who brought this up, whose name I think is Singer, but I'm not sure, started off as animal rights, and he's the guy who invented the saying about animals. It's not whether they can think, it's whether they can suffer. And if they can suffer, they should be treated differently. And that was a very, very powerful thing.
Well, I'm visiting with Phil Manning. We're talking about not his book, but another man's book, Steven Pinker's new book, The Better Angels of Our Nature. Dr. Manning and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Phil Manning, and we're talking about a new book by Steven Pinker. It's called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And Dr. Manning, to suspend our discussion of the point of the book about violence diminishing, where does that title come from?
Came from Abraham Lincoln's, it's the last line in Abraham Lincoln's first inaugural address. And he's talking in there about the looming Civil War that was coming, and he was hoping that the better angels of our nature would allow people to get together and work things out and not have a war. And of course, that unfortunately did not happen.
Well, the Civil War, it's 150 years ago, but it's still contemporary in many, I mean, it's a arena in which we can put ourselves. And that was one of the most violent conflicts, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't very violent for the world, but it was.
It
was particularly violent for Americans because both sides were Americans, and so a whole lot of people got
killed. High percentage of people wounded, a lot of violence, an increasing amount of unfairness in the prison camps, apparently very brutal treatment, both sides, but some of the camps were not something that you would want to brag about. In fact, you could hold them up against some of the Nazi concentration camps. So it's hard for us to brag, isn't it, about our country and how immune from horrible violence we are when we got that Civil War in front of us, notwithstanding Lincoln's hope it got let loose.
It is hard. It is hard, but it is true. I mean, it's very hard to do. But you can say the Civil War was terrible and all this stuff. Well, what percentage of the population was killed, the world population was killed in the Civil War?
Well, what percentage of the United States population? I mean, isn't that where, I mean, the measure within the larger, within the...
Well, not if you got Steven Pinker. He's looking at a global...
So he just says this is one little incident. If you went back in time, this would just be the normal kind of thing that would be happening every day. And
normal might not be exactly the right word. It happened. I mean, you know, if you can plot this stuff up, and he plots it on a log graph. Here's the good news. It shows as a percentage of the population. Mm-hmm. It shows the percentage of people killed in these various wars declining, even down to World War II. The problem is, if you extrapolate that line down to 0.05, that's the probability of something happening, very small probability, the next war would kill 80 million people, if there is a next war.
Because of nuclear weapons or because of...
I don't know what it would be caused. I'm just extrapolating a piece of data.
Oh, I see.
One reviewer described it as Pinker saying that there are fewer wars, but we've got a lot more efficient in killing people because we kill a lot more people now than we used to be able to. It's very difficult to say. I mean, in fact, the whole thesis, Pinker does not say in this book that he says, I'm not trying to predict the future. I'm trying to describe the past. And that's a pretty safe thing, but he can't help but get a little bit into the future.
What is the, I mean, you've identified this as an important book, and what is the point of the book that has some meaning for us and might change the way we operate or the way that we view the world, as it seem, or how did it do that for you?
Let me tell you what he said. I'll sum it up with his words, which I think are really good. First of all, he says, look, I'm here to explain, you know, the past and the present, not to augur the hypotheticals of the future, but like most of us, he can't resist auguring a little bit. And so what he says is this: violent catastrophes may be improbable, but they are not astronomically improbable. Yet that can be stated in a more hopeful way. Violent catastrophes may not be astronomically improbable, but they are improbable. And that's what he thinks. I mean, he's not saying that it could be another war, a huge war, but he thinks it's not probable that that would happen. And that's where his data leads it.
So after all of this, he says, look, here's where I get you. And that is that looking forward as best we can, although it's possible that there could be a large conflagration that would kill millions and millions of people, based on the trends that he's discussed, that's just not very likely.
That's what he says. That's exactly right. He doesn't believe it's probable that we will have another big war. And so, you know, I mean, that's his opinion, and you could disagree with it. But Pickett's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah. Well, and, anything else? I mean, we've discussed the diminishment of violence at local levels close to us, and you're saying that that's not what Pinker is really concerned with. He's not concerned with the micro incidents of violence. And if so, are you concerned about that? And what?
I go back to the circle of empathy. I'll give you an example of the circle of it, what it means. And he says, Pinker says, you know, as our circle of empathy is expanded, we can see the points of view of more and more people. And he says, you know, that there's a lot of evidence that, for example, fiction, just for example, can stimulate empathy. And he gives one classic example, which is Uncle Tom's Cabin, one book. And Abraham Lincoln, when he met Harriet Beecher Stowe, said, ah, here's the little lady that started this war. Hmm. And one book essentially galvanized the abolitionist movement, and it was at least a part of the reason that the Civil War, a book. And what that book did was to take a slave and made him a human being. And people empathized with that and didn't want that to be anymore. Really a good point, I thought. And so the circle of empathy, I believe in that. I think that's right. I mean, the more people that you can feel like a part of your circle, the less likely you are to do them harm.
So on the circle of empathy, I mean, we still have our racial groups in the South, the blacks, whites, Hispanics, and from time to time the tensions between the groups flare up a little bit. And would Pinker and your idea be that it is the availability of the state to confront those uprisings and put them down, that's the answer to why we don't have as much of that? Or, and it's not that we are just kinder, gentler people who have broad-minded ideas and would not go to the streets to fight in if an ethnic war developed.
Yeah, I'll give you an example of that too. This is not a literature, but a painting. You may probably have seen it. It's a little black girl surrounded by four big white cops.
A Norman Rockwell painting.
That's
yeah.
right. Being escorted into mm-hmm. school, I think in Arkansas, and you know, it touches a lot of people. I mean, it didn't. There were people that didn't get touched. There were people that yelled and screamed epithets at this poor child. But for many people, that was a galvanizing thing. It said, wait a minute, we shouldn't be doing this. And that's an expansion of your circle of empathy to include this little black girl who is in such bravery.
Well, see, the picture brought her into white people's circle of empathy. The four lawmen confronted those who didn't see it that way and saw this effort to put the young African-American woman in school as an attack on their social system and their tribal impulses, you know, took them to the streets in many cases.
Yes, it was. I've actually seen film of this. where they of the actual happening, and the language, the faces these mm-hmm. white people had on was just horrible. I don't think you can see that again. I don't think you can see it in this country today. I don't believe it's possible that we could see people act the way they were acting. This is what, 1960, yeah. I guess, somewhere like that, 50 years ago. I don't think you'd see it today.
Yeah. Well, I'm not so sure, but I sure hope you're right. In any event, I really appreciate Dr. Philip Manning coming and telling me about one of his new favorite books, Steven Pinker's The Better Angels of Our Nature. Thanks, Phil. Thanks to all y'all for listening, too. It's been Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. I'll be right back here before you know it.